Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's a working stiff of free speech. This is the third time I've said that. The first time was yesterday, and you heard me. The second time was this morning, and then I immediately got interrupted because I'm a working stiff, and I got interrupted with a business call, and now I'm saying it again. It's a working stiff of free speech. Why am I saying that? Well, yesterday I said it as a kind of a setup to talking about okay, there, I got interrupted again. Talking about what I wanted to talk about. Rather than shilling for RBN yesterday, I did, if you heard the live show, you heard me talk about, well, my experiences, the financial impact of doing all of these shows. I talked about that. And then I talked about how I had decided I'm not going to try to get any money through doing radio shows. I'm just going to work hard as a working stiff, and then with whatever time I can squeeze out, then I'll do this because it's important to me. And then I said, rather than shilling for RBN, I'm going to take a day off of shilling for RBN, and I'm going to shill for Jeremy from Kentucky instead. That's what I said, and I was planning on doing it just for the one day. Well, as it turned out, if you heard me live, you heard that. If you didn't hear me live, and you went to the archives yesterday, you heard Jim Fetzer's show, which was a perfectly good show, but it did not include me shilling for donations to help Jeremy get a transmission. He's not asking for much. It's a transmission. And getting a little bit of money to help him with the transmission. He's not transitioning. No, he needs a transmission. And that is not going to impinge on his independence. You know, this is one thing. So if you are depending on this for a living, okay, and if you're on a platform like YouTube, well, then if you're on YouTube and you're depending on that YouTube money for an income, then you are not going to talk about certain things because you'll get kicked off. Now, there are other platforms that are more free speech oriented. And so there are people who, well, of course, then, you know, there's a whole issue of credit card processors. And the higher, like David Duke, he's had one after another taken from him. So right now, he asked for people to send checks or money orders through snail mail, which isn't a great business model, honestly. There are people who have managed to maintain some sort of payment processor. I had Stripe for a while, but that got taken away from me. So these things, and it was so hard to implement the Stripe in the first place. And when that got taken away, I just said, the hell with it. It's just not worth it for me. So Jeremy, whose profile isn't as high as David Duke's, he's got a GoFundMe. And in just a minute, I'm going to give you that information. But the thing is, you know, I listen to a lot of people like, you've been hearing me for the past year and a half talking about Alexander Mercurius. Well, he's on YouTube. He's on other platforms. And so, I mean, sometimes you hear him very, very purposefully avoiding saying certain things. He won't mention the name Hitler. He'll say a certain German leader from the 1930s. You know, he'll talk like that because he's on YouTube. And on YouTube, he's afraid of even mentioning Hitler. Anyway, where was I? Too many interruptions. But so I am going to show for Jeremy one more day because it wasn't on the archives yesterday, and I want my archive listeners to be able to hear it. So you can donate. So here's the thing: Jeremy does a good job and he cares about your immortal soul. So that's pretty important if you ask me. Go to his GoFundMe, which is https://, you know that routine. Then GoFundMe. This is GoFund.me/1B87C78F. You can get this information from my archive. I'm going to put it in the archive again today. Also, his Cash App, if you know how to use that, which I don't. And it's $Jeremy from KY. And everything's small letters except for that first J. And then you can send him a check or money order. To do that, contact him at patrickandjeremyshow@yahoo.com. Okay, I wanted to do that again to make sure that my archive listeners... I don't listen to hardly anything live. I always listen on archives. And we, meaning Jeremy and myself and a lot of the people on RBN, we're very, very independent. So Alexander Mercurius... you know, he can't even say the word Hitler because it would reduce his income. It would reduce his income if he says the word Hitler. So he can't do that. So very few people, and he does good work. He's a smart guy. So you're not going to find, it's hard to find somebody who is both sharp, you know, knows what's going on, and is... willing to speak honestly and freely. That's why, you know, I keep saying the same thing over and over about RBN. It's the such and such of free speech, because it really is. The hosts here, we're not getting paid by RBN. We're not getting paid for anything. So we really are independent. We're saying what we think. And that is rarer than you would even suspect. Because if we're getting paid, you know, let's say you work for the Daily Wire. Is that what it is? Ben Shapiro. Oh, God, you're working for Ben Shapiro. Well, if you're working for Ben Shapiro, obviously the guy who's writing the check is calling the tune. But, you know, we've got our people, that sharp people, but working stiffs. We're working stiffs. I remember, Michael Herzog, who had a show, he's had shows on RBN off and on. I'm not sure if he's off or on right now, but he drove Uber, right? And so you get this. We have a Steve Elkins. He's a medical professional, and I think he's still going to work. I don't think he's retired yet. And then you got people who are a bit older. John Moore is older. He's retired. So I hope he's independently wealthy or independently middle class or at least independently poor and used to it. People like that, too. So that's the story. That's why RBN is important. I'm not going to repeat this again, but just because it wasn't on the archive yesterday, I'm repeating this routine. Okay. Let's turn my notes over. Here's something. And this was something Jim Fetzer reported yesterday. And I want to talk about a little bit about the significance of this. Egypt is deploying tanks in the Sinai, not just in the Sinai, but in Rafah. Rafah is the one little border, probably like 7 or 8 miles of a straight line through the desert. That is the only border that is not directly, only border of Gaza that is not directly controlled by Israel, because the rest of its land border is with Israel, and then Israel blockades it, has a sea blockade that's been going on, and Israel controls the airspace, which has been going on. Now, Egypt has for decades, it has cooperated with Israel in that border, that Rafah crossing. They've allowed Israeli cameras to operate at the crossing and things like that. But it is a border with Egypt, and Egypt's deploying tanks. And the significance of this is that when Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin, when they came to this Camp David peace accord in 1979, I believe, was when the accord was signed. I think the negotiations were going on in 78 to 79. But and by the way, Sadat wound up paying for that with his life. He got assassinated by his own military at a when he was reviewing a military parade. He was in the review stands, and one of the paraders, as I recall, one of the paraders just jumped out of the parade and blew him away. Not a nice way to go. I believe that's, you can check it out. I'm sure that's on his Wikipedia page. You can check it out. But it was something along those lines. He paid for it with his life because people were not pleased with the treaty he did with Israel. It got Egypt kicked out of the Arab League. Egypt is the biggest Arab country in terms of population. It's got by far the largest population. Right now, its population is, I think it's close to 120 million. It's got about the same population as Japan. It's a huge country. It's joining BRICS, by the way. And so it's this huge country, massive population. And but part of that deal for the peace deal with Israel, where they got, you know, it used to be if you had an Egyptian stamp in your passport, you couldn't go to other you couldn't even go to other Arab countries. I think that was the deal. So when you went to Egypt, what did they do? They didn't stamp your passport or something like that. I think that's the case. Maybe that was the case with Israel, but I think that was the case with Egypt too. They wouldn't stamp your passport. They'd give you something like that would be stapled into it or something, so that if you were going to go to other Arab countries, they wouldn't see that you had visited Egypt. Maybe I'm confusing that with Israel. I've never been to either country, but at any rate, the peace treaty, it largely demilitarized the Sinai Peninsula, because in this 1967 war, the Six-Day War, Israel captured the Sinai Peninsula, and it captured the Sinai Peninsula, and that was, you know, 12 years later, that was given back. There hadn't been any large-scale Israeli settlements in the Sinai. So they gave that back to Egypt on the condition that it would be largely demilitarized. There was, you know, police forces, a little, I'm not exactly sure what the details are, but it was largely demilitarized. So if Egypt is bringing a lot of tanks and whatnot, well, then that's being ignored. Jim Fetzer, in his report yesterday, was saying that in recent years, because there has, in the Sinai Peninsula, there have been Islamist militants operating, that Israel has been turning a blind eye to infractions of that prescription on the deployment of military assets in Sinai as it is. So this is something ominous. The Egyptian public is not in the least bit happy about what's going on in Gaza. The Egyptian government does not want, they're not happy. You see, the thing is, the current president of Egypt is a guy named Sisi, and he's a general. I don't know his full name, but some general something something al-Sisi. And he took over in a coup. There was a coup. You had, in the wake of the so-called Arab Spring, the Arab Spring of, 2011, you had the longtime president, Hosni Mubarak, who had been Anwar Sadat's vice president at the time that Anwar Sadat was blown away at a military parade. Mubarak took over. At the time, people didn't even think Mubarak was going to last long because he didn't seem to have any kind of political base, but he did last. He lasted for, because that took place, was that 1981, early 81? Or was it 80? It was either 80 or 81. I think it was 81. And so he wound up being ruler of the country for 30 years, which is, that's a pretty long run. He got deposed. They had elections, and a guy, oh, what was his name? I forgot the guy who won the elections, but he was Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood. Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamist group, and so this guy, you can check Wikipedia, his name slips in my mind, but he became president of Egypt for a couple of years. He was the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, and Hamas is also an Islamist group. It actually has its roots in the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, Sisi overthrew, what was the guy's name? Hold on a second. Okay, so yeah, this is, I'm relying on Wikipedia for this, but all right, so Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, his predecessor was Mohamed Morsi. It was Morsi, yeah. So Morsi was the president of Egypt from 2012 to 2013, and then he was overthrown in a coup d'etat. So the current president of Egypt, al-Sisi, his whole reason for being there was to save Egypt from the Muslim Brotherhood. That's like his whole purpose as president. So the idea of having like a large number of refugees, up to, you know, 2.3 million refugees from Gaza, who to a large extent are going to be pro-Hamas, therefore pro-Muslim Brotherhood. No, that is something that is completely unacceptable to al-Sisi. So, anyway. So, this is a big deal. I had another interruption.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting Truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
No, that is something that's completely unacceptable to Al-Sisi. So, anyway. So, this is a big deal. I had another interruption. I get a lot of interruptions. But this is a big deal. Egypt is huge. And the thing is that Israel's been able to act with impunity regarding Gaza over these past, well, I mean, you can talk about many, many years, but if we're talking about the period of this economic blockade and physical blockade of Gaza that's been going on since 2006, 2007, we've been talking about this since Hamas won the legislative elections in 2006. Well, what's the international environment been like since 2006? 2006, this is the unipolar moment, right? So Israel, since the end of the Cold War, and it's really been going hog wild since then in terms of the massive settlement building and whatnot, but since the end of the Cold War, it's had Uncle Tom, not Uncle Tom, I'm sorry, Uncle Sam, you can call me a monkey's uncle, but I get my uncles mixed up sometimes. So Uncle Sam has been the big brother. They've been protecting. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but they've been protecting Israel, and so Israel's been able to just do whatever it wants because Uncle Tom, Uncle Sam. You know, actually, who was the uncle on the? On the Adams family. Who is that uncle? Because I think that's who we are. I think America's that uncle. Morticia's, what was it? Morticia had an uncle. Wasn't that the Adams family? Or am I thinking of the other show with the Frankenstein guy? Oh, well, whatever. You boomers know what I'm talking about. There was an uncle there. Oh, so on the Frankenstein show, the wife was kind of hot, and she was like a vampire. I think she was Italian, and then she had an uncle who, right? No, that was Grandpa. That was Grandpa. Okay, so that's not the uncle. So the uncle was on the Addams Family. Look it up. I'm driving now. I can't look it up, but look it up on Wikipedia. We're that uncle. We're not Uncle Tom. We're not Uncle Sam. We're that uncle. So, but, you know, Israel's been able to do whatever it wanted because you had the unipolar world. And the United States made sure that Israel, first of all, it made sure that Israel was armed to the teeth with the latest weapons that were supplied. And, you know, the United States keeps arsenals in Israel. It just keeps arsenals. Why does it keep arsenals in Israel? It keeps arsenals in Israel so that if Israel ever needs weaponry, they can purchase the weaponry, always at a discount, but they can purchase that weaponry in, and it's already there. So it's right there. It's like if CVS just kept like a giant supply of whatever you wanted in your medicine cabinet, and you didn't have to pay for it until you actually used it, but it was right there whenever you needed it, right? So that's what the United States, that's one of the things that the United States has been doing for Israel, which it doesn't do for anybody else, right? And it's such a Jewish thing. Honestly, I'm sorry, it's such a Jewish thing to get that deal set up. Just like getting all of your aid money at the beginning of the year so that you can put it in the bank and earn interest. I mean, it's such a Jewish thing. The loan guarantees. You get the United States to guarantee all the loans that your government is, which was a big deal for a while, because Israel had a currency collapse in the 80s, and it had a lousy credit rating. So it was a big deal for a while. These are all very, very Jewish things. But anyway, so during the unipolar moment, Israel could do anything it wanted. During the Cold War, there were constraints on Israel, but not so much that it wasn't able to launch the Six-Day War. But there were constraints. There were constraints, but still, if you know, you're talking about the Cold War, the Arab countries didn't have as great capabilities. But what you got now, we're past the unipolar moment, so we're into a period of multipolarity, and you've got some of Israel's enemies are allies of Russia and even China. So obviously Syria and Russia are very close. The Iran, which is Israel's most feared enemy, Iran.
Sweet Leilani, heavenly flower.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details, or visit 3DBunkers.com.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-877-877. 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Even China. So obviously Syria and Russia are very close. The Iran, which is Israel's most feared enemy, Iran. All right, I'm driving. I paused, but if you didn't hear me pause, I would have said, come on, dude, you got to, move. Pick a side, we're at war. That's what I said to him. Anyway, but you didn't hear me say that live. So, now where was I? It's so distracting doing things like this. But Iran is effectively in a military alliance with Russia and China. It's not formalized by a treaty, but they had military joint naval exercises in the, I think it's the Arabian Sea. So that's a big deal. They had earlier this year, China, Russia, and Iran had joint military exercises. I'm going to take a break for a second. I'll be right back. So you got Iran, it's effectively an ally with Russia and China. You've got Egypt. So Egypt's got, Egypt's population is over 100 million. Iran is almost 100 million. Right there, you've got 200 million. You've got Syria, which has grievances against Israel. Now, Egypt is mad at Israel because Egypt doesn't want these pro-Hamas, pro-Muslim Brotherhood people being pushed into the Sinai. It's the irony. There's a lot of irony here with the, and I shouldn't be laughing, but there's a lot of irony with the Gazans are going to be pushed into the Sinai. I mean, does Israel not see some sort of irony about people getting pushed into the Sinai? What are they supposed to do? Wander for 40 years? It's very weird. The Iranians are very sympathetic to Hamas. Now, Hamas is a Sunni group. The Muslim Brotherhood's a Sunni group. But Hamas has been very much supported, or at least allied or aligned with these Shiite groups. So the Iran, they 43 years ago, they had, I guess 44 years ago by now, they had their Islamic Revolution. It set up the Islamic Republic of Iran. It led to the hostage crisis because the Americans had overthrown a prime minister in 1953, Mossadegh, using the American embassy as a staging ground for it. So after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, the students took over the American embassy to make sure it wouldn't be used as a staging ground for overthrowing the coup, for overthrowing the revolution. So you had all that, and relations between the United States and Iran have been bad ever since. But so you've got this Islamic government that is Shiite, and the government in Syria is Alawite, which is kind of an offshoot of Shiite Islam. It is not. It is distinct from the Sunni Islam. And the Shiites and the Sunnis were thought to have been like giant rivals and incompatible with each other. But if there's one thing they're compatible, and that is their opposition to Israel, and also their sympathy, at least of the populations, not always the leadership, but at least the populations, very sympathetic to the Palestinians. I saw a little, well, at least a picture of, I was reading an article about the leader of Hezbollah in Lebanon, and he's a cleric. Oh gosh, what's his name? His name slips my mind, but he's going to be making a speech. Maybe he's already made it. I'm going to check on that. Yeah, so his Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, he gave a televised speech on Friday, and he repeated that Hezbollah is ready for all possibilities. So he's all possibilities. Well, the thing is, in the article I was looking at yesterday, they showed a picture of him, and he was sitting with... Who was he sitting with? I don't remember. But what was remarkable was that the portraits on the wall behind him, he had portraits of Ayatollah Khomeini. And I think the other was Ayatollah Khomeini, who is the Khomeini is how we often said it back in the day in the 80s. He was the leader of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, and he died, I guess, in 1988, and then he was replaced as supreme leader, which, by the way, is an elected position. The current supreme leader has been in office since 88. He's an old man, but that's Ayatollah Khamenei, slightly different pronunciation. But he had their portraits on the wall. So that's the closeness of connection there. And Lebanon has a very particular and peculiar kind of government. So they have a president, they have a prime minister. The president is by tradition always a Christian, the prime minister is a Sunni Muslim, and then the Speaker of the House of Speaker of Parliament is by tradition a Shiite Muslim. And that is because when Lebanon became an independent country, the last census was taken in about 1948 or something, and at that time, at that census, the Christians were the largest portion of the population, then followed by Sunnis and followed by Shiite. Now, they've had differential birth rates since then, and so that's no longer the case, but they don't have censuses anymore. But the Hezbollah... The Hezbollah militia is extremely strong, and so I don't know if you could call them the effective rulers of Lebanon, but if nothing else, you would have to say that they are a integral part of the government, or at least the rulers. I mean, they are integral to the government of Lebanon, and they're strong. Are they as big and well-equipped as the Israeli army? No, they're not, but they're a lot bigger and better equipped than Hamas, which is, you know, they're inflicting their own casualties on Israel. So this is a big deal. So what you have is, with the end of the, we're past the Cold War, we're past the unipolar moment, we're in this new multipolar world, and the protection that Uncle, what was the guy's name? Uncle Felden or whatever his name was on the Adams family. He just can't provide that protection to Israel anymore. You know, it's not Uncle Tom. It's not Uncle Sam. It's Uncle, what was the guy's name? Okay. I'm trying to look it up now. I'm seeing it for you. It was Uncle Fester. Uncle Fester. All right, it was Uncle Fester. Okay. Okay, so it was Uncle Fester. In the meantime, it was Uncle Fester. In the meantime, since I, since 10 seconds before, I stopped recording my show, and then Mark Dankoff and I recorded a show. And that will be playing immediately. If you're listening to this live, it'll be playing immediately after this. I've got to hustle to get these to the studio because it's already, we're already 0-42 minutes for my show. So I got to hustle to get this stuff up. But I'm not done recording yet. So, Mark and I talked an awful lot about the Palestinian thing. So I'm going to not, I don't want to be too repetitive. You can stay tuned and listen to that. Here's something. So I was, where was I hearing this from? I was listening to somebody, I can't even remember. I guess it was it Alexander Mercurius? I think it was Alexander Mercurius, but it was somebody. And they were reading from a writer for a British tabloid or newspaper. Was it the Daily Mail? I think it was the Daily Mail. It could have been the Independent. It was one or the other. And he was quoting somebody who's really pro-Israel, but had written an article. And I was trying to catch the name. It sounded like Levin, which I'm sure is just Levin. Maybe, you know, like we have Mark Levine, you know, so sometimes you'll hear this name Levin, which is next to Cohen. I mean, Levin, the Levites are the second most prestigious priestly class. So the Levites are a priestly class. And it was some derivation of that name, I'm sure. So it was some Jew, all right? I'm pretty sure. Don't hold me on it, but it sounded like he was saying that this is a very pro-Israel guy, but he was writing an article, and he was making the comment that there is this perception that a perception with a basis to it that Biden, the American administration, Biden, they have a double standard for lives of white Ukrainians as opposed to brown Palestinians. And I got to say, this is really a very Jewish thing to do when Jews get called out. When Jews get called out on something, they stop being Jewish and they start being white. All right? So to shift the blame. So this the attack on Gazans, it's not due to Jewish supremacism, Jewish feelings that the Goyim are just cattle. No, it's due to whites and their racism against non-whites. All right? Now, and this is something that Alexander Mercurius isn't going to talk about because Alexander Mercurius doesn't talk about the Jewish issue. And the thing is, I get so much information from him. I'm not trying to give him a hard time. I did say that he was highly cynical regarding Hamas, even though I don't know what the word cynical means. But he knows what it means, and I hear him calling people cynical, so I'm calling him cynical because he's saying that Hamas committed terrorism, that Hamas broke international law. And I, what I've been saying is that that's not even an interesting question, whether Hamas's actions on October 7th are a violation of international law or meet a definition of terrorism. I don't even think those are interesting questions, so I haven't really been addressing them directly. What I have said, so I haven't been making, I haven't been trying to make a case for Hamas. I think there's a case to be made for Hamas, but I haven't made it. I haven't making the case against Hamas. I'm making the case against Hamas. And so, you know, people like Alexander Mercurius are saying that, like, the starting point for everything should be a condemnation of Hamas, and then moving forward from there. Well, you know, here's one thing. First of all, if you look at the world, outside of the Zionist-dominated countries, in particular, you look at the Muslim world, and nobody wants to condemn Hamas anyway. They're all sympathetic. And then you look at the African world. They're probably sympathetic too, and a lot of them are Muslims. You look past it to South America or China, or even Russia, and they're probably ambivalent at best. You know, are they ambivalent? I mean, China's got a problem with Muslim extremists, so does Russia, but at the same time, ambivalent at best. But a big hunk of the world supports Hamas in the first place. And then another big hunk is ambivalent. But then even when you get to those who share Alexander Mercurius's view that, well, you have to condemn Hamas first. Well, then what happens after that? What happens after that is, okay, you've condemned Hamas, but now Israel's actions since October 7th are so egregious that even once you've condemned Hamas, that Israel's actions are so egregious that there's little sympathy left for Israel. So Israel's in a bad shape, and the longer this goes on, the more egregious Israel's actions are going to appear to people, because the more evidence comes out. You know, Israel has tried to do things like destroy the internet connectivity of Gaza with the rest of the world so that people's cell phone videos can't come out. But they're leaking out anyway. And then also you got things like satellite imagery. All this is coming out anyway. So you've got that. And then just regarding sympathy. So I haven't been making the case for Hamas. And this is why I haven't been making the case. Rather, I've been making the case against Hamas. The thing is, part of what I try to do is try to develop narratives that people can use. And I think for a lot of people in their day-to-day life, people don't necessarily have all the background information. Like, if you were going to make a case for Hamas, you know, you'd have to deal with...
We're going to sing together, okay? Tiny bubble. Make me happy. Eat your hot lunch.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
HempPaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit HempPaste.com/RBN.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Narratives that people can use. And I think for a lot of people in their day-to-day life, people don't necessarily have all the background information. Like, if you were going to make a case for Hamas, you know, you'd have to deal with their willingness to negotiate, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18 years ago, their willingness to negotiate and their willingness to have a ceasefire. Because people might say, well, Hamas won't accept Israel's right to exist and this type of thing, which is true, but there are caveats there. And of course, Israel's never said where it is going to exist. It hasn't defined its borders. It won't define its borders. So if you are clinging to a little bit of territory that Israel covets, and Israel won't say, oh, well, don't worry, we're not interested in that. This is, if you're clinging to land that Israel covets, how can you then go and recognize Israel's right to exist when they're not even saying where they exist and they want to exist on your land? So you're not going to talk about rights. But people, if you don't have this background information, this is a difficult thing to counter with. So that's why. And then, you know, also the ceasefire, they were willing to have a ceasefire. Also, people also often say that Hamas is in their what is it? Not their Declaration of Independence, their founding document. They call for the destruction of Israel. Well, okay, in their founding document, which is actually, it's not like, well, in our Declaration of Independence, you know, we call Indians ruthless savages, right? And why haven't we changed that? You would think we would have changed that with all of the wokeness. Well, actually, there's no vehicle for changing it. There's no mechanism by which we can change the Declaration of Independence. It happened in 1776. There's no going back and changing it. And this Hamas Charter, that's what they call it, the Hamas Charter, there's no mechanism for going back and changing it. It was a call to arms. And they call for the destruction of Israel. By what means? Well, they want rocks and trees to shout out whenever there's an Israeli behind. They want the rocks and trees to shout out, there's a Jew hiding behind me. I mean, that's actually in the document. So it's like, it's not some sort of legally binding thing. It's not like their constitution. But if you don't have this background information, it's not the type of thing you can argue. So that's why I haven't been making the case for Hamas, because I don't think most people can make the case for Hamas. But you can make the case against Hamas. And the case, the main argument for that is that Gaza and Hamas and Palestinians in general have been living in a justice-free zone. There's no justice. They have no recourse to any kind of legal protections. And for 16, 17 years, and then all of a sudden, you're going to expect them to abide by the law when they have no protections from the law? And I think that is a strong argument against the case against Hamas. All right, I've got to hurry up and get this over to RBN. I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.